If you're a maintenance supervisor at a manufacturing facility and your machinery isn't working right, Grainger knows you need to understand what's wrong as soon as possible. So when a conveyor motor falters, Grainger offers diagnostic tools like calibration kits and multimeters to help you identify and fix the problem. With Grainger, you can be confident you have everything you need to keep your facility running smoothly. Call 1-800-GRAINGER, click Grainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
If you're a custodial supervisor at a local high school, you know that cleanliness is key and that the best place to get cleaning supplies is from Grainger. Grainger helps you stay fully stocked on the products you trust, from paper towels and disinfectants to floor scrubbers. Plus, you can rely on Grainger for easy reordering, so you never run out of what you need. Call 1-800-GRAINGER, click Grainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done. If you're a custodial supervisor at a local high school, you know that cleanliness is key and that the best place to get cleaning supplies is from Grainger. Grainger helps you stay fully stocked on the products you trust, from paper towels and disinfectants to floor scrubbers. Plus, you can rely on Grainger for easy reordering, so you never run out of what you need. Call 1-800-GRAINGER, click Grainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
If you're a maintenance supervisor at a manufacturing facility and your machinery isn't working right, Grainger knows you need to understand what's wrong as soon as possible. So when a conveyor motor falters, Grainger offers diagnostic tools like calibration kits and multimeters to help you identify and fix the problem. With Grainger, you can be confident you have everything you need to keep your facility running smoothly. Call 1-800-GRAINGER, click Grainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
This is Hidden Killers with Tony Bruschi. Here now, Tony Bruschi.
There's something darkly predictable about Brian Walsh. Every time you think he'd run out of ways to manipulate the system, he finds another angle, another story, another excuse, another layer of deception so transparent it's almost insulting. Now, as his competency hearing approaches, we're watching the same performance play out again. This time, from a hospital bed at Bridgewater State after being stabbed by a fellow inmate. The defense says he's too traumatized to stand trial, too mentally unstable to participate. But if you followed the case from the beginning, you have to ask yourself how much of this is real and how much is yet another act from a man who's built his entire life on lies. Let's rewind. Because before the headlines about stabbing and evaluations, before the court delays and competency questions, there was a woman named Anna Walsh, a mother of three, a successful professional, someone who worked herself to the bone to build a future for her family. Then on New Year's morning of 2023, she vanished. Her husband, Brian, told police that she had flown out early to Washington, D.C. for a work emergency. That was the story. The problem was there was no flight. No Uber, no cell activity, no credit card use, just silence almost immediately. The police noticed something wasn't adding up. Walsh had been under house arrest for federal art fraud when Anna disappeared. He'd already been convicted of selling fake Andy Warhol paintings, you know, like you do as a side hustle. Another con in a lifetime of cons. A man accustomed to bending reality until it snapped. So when Anna went missing, investigators already knew they were dealing with someone whose relationship with the truth was kind of negotiable. What they found next confirmed it. In the days before and after Anna vanished, Brian Walsh made some of the most chilling Google searches you'll ever hear read aloud in a courtroom. I'm not going to go through the full list because it's a long list, but I'm going to give some of them to you. If you want the full list, look back in our archive of videos and audio. You will find it. We have videos dedicated to it. Here's some. 10 ways to dispose of a dead body if you really need to. How long before a body starts to smell? Hacksaw. Best tool to dismember? OK.
Can you be charged with a murder without a body? How long for someone to be missing before you can inherit? That wasn't curiosity. That wasn't an accident. That was preparation. That was panic. That was the digital fingerprint of a man already trying to figure out how to erase what he'd done. And it didn't stop there. Surveillance footage from a Home Depot showed him wearing gloves and a mask, buying hundreds of dollars of cleaning supplies, mops, tarps, buckets, paid for in cash. Blood and a broken knife were later found in the basement of the Walsh home. Traces of Anna's DNA were discovered on several items discarded in trash bags near Boston, near his mom's house. Everything pointed in one direction, and yet to this day, no body has been found of Anna. If you've been following this story, you know that the prosecution's case isn't built on a single smoking gun. It's a mountain of small, precise cuts, the timeline, the searches, the lies, the purchases, the cleanup. Each one on its own might leave room for doubt, but together they paint a picture of premeditation so clear it's almost cinematic in its arrogance. And that's exactly who Brian Walsh is, a man convinced he's smarter than everyone else in the room. Let's not forget the backdrop. This isn't a man with a clean slate suddenly losing control. This is someone who's been manipulating people for years. His art fraud wasn't just a one-time mistake. It was a scheme that targeted collectors, friends, even family. He forged documents, used fake provenance, and looked people in the eye while lying through his teeth. There is also that 2014 police report from Washington, D.C., where Anna reportedly told authorities that Brian had threatened to kill her. There's that, too. No charges were filed, but the record allegedly exists. So when people now suggest that maybe, just maybe, he's mentally incompetent, maybe we should look at the full pattern. Because this man's entire history screams the opposite of incompetence. It screams control, calculation, and self-interest. Now we get to the newest chapter of this slow-moving courtroom saga. September of 25, Walsh is stabbed by another inmate in jail. His defense quickly pivots. He's traumatized, confused, possibly brain damaged. The world could only be so lucky. Suddenly, the man who meticulously researched dismemberment techniques and murder laws is too disoriented to assist in his own defense. Bridgewater State Hospital begins its evaluation. The process drags on. The competency hearing is delayed. The trial is pushed, and the headlines change. Instead of focusing on the evidence, the blood, the searches, the lies, we're now talking about whether he's fit to stand trial. It's a brilliant distraction, really. And if you know how the system works, you can almost hear the defense strategy clicking into place. Because once you raise the specter of incompetence, everything slows down. Evaluation takes months. Hearings get postponed. Discovery deadlines move. The public forgets the details. The outrage softens. The case fades from urgency into bureaucracy. And Brian Walsh, who's always known how to manipulate process and perception, gets exactly what he's thrived on. Time. So what does competent to stand trial actually mean? It doesn't mean sane. It doesn't mean healthy. It means that a defendant understands the charges against him and can assist in his own defense. That's it. If you can have a coherent conversation with your lawyer, if you know why you're sitting in that courtroom, you're competent. So when we're told that a man as cunning and articulate as Brian Walsh suddenly can't grasp what's happening because of a jailhouse stabbing, we're right to be skeptical. Especially when that same man has spent his entire life manipulating every system he's ever touched, legal, financial, and personal. Think about the psychology here. Brian has built his identity around control, controlling narratives, people, and outcomes. The art fraud was about control. His marriage appeared to be about control. Even his alleged crime, if proven, was the ultimate act of control. Taking away Anna's life, taking away her voice, deciding when and how her story ended, that's not incompetence, that's obsession. So to now claim that he's suddenly too impaired to stand trial feels like the final insult to Anna, to their children, to every person he's deceived along the way. Prosecutors aren't buying it, and they've made it clear. The evidence is overwhelming, the motive is clear, and the manipulative behavior hasn't stopped. It's simply evolved. They're prepared to move forward as soon as the court signs off on his competency. Meanwhile, his defense keeps leaning into the narrative of trauma and being incapable. The stabbing, they argue, has changed everything. Maybe. But so far, there's been no credible sign that his cognitive abilities have deteriorated to the point of genuine incompetence. If anything, his legal maneuvers look exactly like they've always been. Delay, distraction, and manipulation. There's a reason this story still matters as the competency hearing approaches, because in cases like this, the courtroom can become a stage. And if we're not careful, the audience starts forgetting what the show is about. This isn't about whether Brian Walsh can read his own legal documents or answer the lawyer's questions. It's about a missing woman, a mother, a victim of violence whose story risks being buried under procedural drama. The focus should remain where it belongs, on the evidence, on the lies, on the behavior that brought us here. And make no mistake, when that evidence is presented in full, it's going to be brutal. The Google searches alone read like a confession. The physical evidence, the blood, the knife, the cleaning supplies cements it. The timeline obliterates the alibi. The pattern of deceit ties it all together. This is a man who didn't just allegedly kill his wife. He thought he could outsmart everyone while doing it. And now, standing on the edge of trial, he's trying to run the same con. One more time. Okay, we won't get into a dance party right now. So as we head into this competency hearing, remember what we already know. Remember the searches, remember the lies, remember the way the story began. On a New Year's morning, with a missing woman and a husband who couldn't keep his story straight for more than 24 hours. Remember the pattern, because if Brian Walsh has proven anything, it's that his greatest talent isn't violence, it's manipulation. And the question before the court isn't whether he's competent, it's whether we are competent enough not to be fooled by him again. Your thoughts in the comment section on YouTube. This might strike a chord with some folks, because he's that classic narcissist figure, kind of like a Donna Adelson. Can do whatever. They're never wrong. Everyone's out to get them. It's always somebody else's fault. What are your thoughts on this case? How damning is it? I mean, those Google searches, shit. We see a lot of Google searches on this show. We see lots of Google searches, and it's amazing how stupid people are. Like, you didn't think, like, you went to all these lengths to protect your crime and to protect yourself from being found out, but you just blatantly Googled this stuff? Huh? Smart to a point on a lot of these monsters. But like I said, on YouTube, in our comment section, give us your thoughts. I want to see them. I want to read them. I want to reply. And if you're not already there, when you are there, hit subscribe. Hit subscribe wherever you're listening to this as well. If you're listening to us on one of the podcast platforms, Hidden Killers with Tony Bruschi. That's what you search. Anywhere, everywhere you want to be is where we are at. We will talk again.
Want more on this case and others? Then press subscribe now and don't miss a moment of true crime coverage from Tony Bruschi and the Hidden Killers podcast.